Here, the old gods are dead.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Late Little Podcast. I'm Rebecca with Liam.
So I'm thinking about becoming a DJ.
Aren't we all?
No, but like, not like take a shot of estrogen and then become like the next Sophie sort of thing. I mean like 90s, like disco DJ, like bad. Like ladies to the dance floor kind of DJ.
It's like Cascada.
Yeah, I've been really enjoying it. But yeah, anytime I do this like DJ bit, it reminds me of Alex, because that was our thing. Do the Creepy Week podcast people know the lore of like, my best friend is also your ex?
No.
Well, I think they should. That. It's very interesting. So that's an Easter egg for everyone. Not an Easter egg, but just... something to know.
And now you have a podcast.
I know, so problematic, but I kind of like it. Oh my god, it's Pride. Have we recorded anything this month?
Yeah, sorry we are late. It's like personal reasons. It's not that deep, but I can't say why yet. I was late.
Don't want to jinx it.
I don't want to jinx it. No, yeah, the last episode that we did was on the 7th of June, and it was the Master Stuart Worm. And then I had put in the Instagram that we were going to be doing Murphy content, but I got run away with my feelings. Yeah, I got run away with my feelings and did something else, which by the title, you already know that I was like reading about Macbeth and decided, which is a shame because a couple of people who listened to this like messaged us on Instagram was like, I'm so excited for this.
And I know. And every time they messaged it, I was like, that's Becca's problem. Like, I'm not replying. I don't know how to let people down easy like that.
Sorry about that. Well, I didn't lie. I just said that we'll be doing it at some point, which is true. But after this episode, we've got a bigger series coming out where I will be reading a book once again and potentially doing a three-part series on a Scottish icon. Betting pool on which Scottish icon you think we're going to be talking about.
You should do a sweepstake or something.
Yeah.
£1 per entry.
I was messaging my sister and I was like, oh, I'm doing a series on like a really iconic Scottish historical figure, and they guessed everybody but this person.
They're like,
they
were Jackie Bird.
They were saying some nonsense and I was like, I'm not being funny, but like, you're going to kick yourself when you realise who this is.
Yeah, it's kind of glaringly obvious.
Yeah.
Not unrelated to previous topics. That's a hint. Quite a big one, actually.
Not that big one.
When I say big one, like, I meant what it's related to. Like, episode-wise. I think one of the hits... Yeah. Not the big hit, but you're not thinking, like, if you're thinking the big hit, you're thinking the wrong one. But the other one?
That's a good clue, actually. That is a really good clue.
So speaking of DJs, what would your DJ name be and what would your club night be called? And what day of the week would it take place?
I think mine would be on a Thursday.
I was going to say Thursday.
I love a Thursday night out.
Me too.
Mine's is inspired by the music in the noughties, like Mean Girls soundtrack, Britney Spears, Nelly Furtado, Unwritten by Natasha Bedingfield.
Yeah.
like that kind of music. And a lot of Kylie Minogue. And it would either be called Unwritten or That's Hot, a la Paris Hilton. But yep. That's inspired by, I think, my sister's friend or flatmate from Dundee did a DJ set in Dundee, and it was That's Hot. And I think that's they did hot. Similar music, but I'm not sure.
That is hot.
That is hot.
Aptly named. So, and what would your DJ name be?
Is Tinkerbell Hilton like two on the nose? Rest in peace.
Oh.
On Nintendogs, I had a chihuahua called Tinkerbell because I used to read all my mum's Take a Break magazine, so I was aware of the cultural impact of Tinkerbell.
That is, I live.
London Tipton might also be a good one.
London Tipton.
That would be a good one.
That would be. I would enjoy that. I would go, like, I'd know what to expect. I think that aptly describes your club night. So my DJ name would be Liam FM, like all one word, but the FM stands for faggot music. And that and that would be what I would be playing. And my club night, also a Thursday, because hot take, Thursday's the best night to go out because then you're hungover at work on Friday. Yeah, that's shit. But also, you're fine by Friday night, and it's kind of like having an extra day of the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Because you start partying early. And then Saturday's over. Like, if you're going out on a Thursday, it's, like, cheap because you're usually going to a club night of some kind. Like, Wednesday, Thursday, Monday, Tuesday. Like, they're, like, the cheap nights.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you want to go out on them because who has the money? But then... Like, it's like close enough to the weekend that you can let yourself loose.
I thought you meant Liam FM as in Liam Femme.
No, there's so many ways to interpret it. So, like, also, like, FM, like, radio.
First Minister.
yeah, there's so many ways to look at it. But it stands for faggot music. That's the real reason. Because that's what I would be playing. Like, it's the same music you just described. Point blank, my club night would be called Breathe On Me as an homage to Britney Spears' most underrated song. It's so good. She has a line in that song where she just goes, monogamy is the way to go. But it's like
she really was just saying things.
But it is like the sexiest song of all time. So like it's crazy. I love it. But yeah, so like the energy would be like, you know, like dancing, like putting your hands through your hair sort of thing.
Liam just danced like, what is that person? Who's that actress that plays all the Asian people?
Scarlett Johansson in Marriage Story.
He just danced like Scarlett Johansson. Insert Scarlett Johansson gif.
Okay, that's going in the thing, just in case anyone doesn't know. But yeah, so I think it would be fun. I would not try and mix anything at all. It would be the most horrible transitions. It would just be like going out of the audio to me saying something. Like, everybody grab your partner. This one's for the girls. And then like putting the music back up again.
Should we talk tragedy?
That's one of the songs I would play. Tragedy.
This episode is going to be about the curse of Macbeth.
Work.
Not the play of Macbeth, because imagine I just like read Macbeth. That would be so embarrassing.
I would make you do the episode alone.
Is it bad luck to just constantly say Macbeth on a podcast? This isn't the stage.
We're not performing. I'm being fucking real. I'm having fun and I'm being my fucking self. This is 100% authentically me.
My voice must be echoing something awfully, by the way. Anyway.
It's kind of nice. It's foreboding. It works for what you're about to talk about.
It works for the content. Yeah, sorry if my audio is a bit rank. I was working from home today and I couldn't even be bothered moving my laptop. So.
Honestly, we're like how many years into this podcast now? People think they're getting good audio at this point.
Like, you get
there's no point.
Semi-good content, sometimes good laughs, you're not getting good audio.
No, or good pronunciations. Like, just accept the facts.
Okay, we'll take a wee break and then we'll talk about Macbeth.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I need to tell you something about this fucking play. We're back from the break now. I need to tell you something about this fucking play. I love this fucking play. We read it for the first time. We read the kids' adaptation of it in primary six. It got my shit together. I was so invested in this play. I was like, she's a cunty cuntress. All of the women, cunty. I was obsessed. I want
all of the four women.
Yeah, but that's a lot by the standards of the time. It was life changing for me. Like, this is a very queer coded piece of media. Not in that there's a lot of, well, there is actually a lot of queer stuff in it, but like more so just that I find queer people are drawn to it.
Yeah, I played Lady Macbeth. Well, I read for Lady Macbeth when we did it in Higher English.
I wanted to, but they didn't let me.
Hopes, yeah, I think I say this a lot, but Shakespeare doesn't get his flowers. He's an excellent playwright.
No one's talking about it. No one has ever said that before.
I talk about Shakespeare quite a lot because he's no. This might be a hot take. Shakespeare's my favorite playwright and probably the only playwright I can name apart from Arthur Miller.
Oh my god! Another two legends in their field.
Yeah, but I really, really, this is my favorite tragedy along with Othello, and then for comedies it has to be The Twelfth Night. She's the man.
Standing ovation every time. I like The Tempest. My mum likes The Tempest also. And I also like Midsummer Night's Dream. The amount of times in a day I will find a way to say Jealous Oberon just for no fucking reason other than that's a quote I remember.
Me, when I say jealousy is the green-eyed monster, referring to Othello.
And you do, you say that a lot. You've said that to me so many times.
This is an episode for annoying people who love Shakespeare. Anyway, so Macbeth, or The Tragedy of Macbeth, is a tragedy by William Shakespeare, thought to have first been performed in 1906. It dramatises the damaging physical and psychological effects of political ambition on those who seek power. Of all the plays that Shakespeare wrote during the reign of James I and VI, Macbeth clearly reflects his relationship with King James, patron of Shakespeare's acting company. So Shakespeare's source for the story is the account of Macbeth, King of Scotland, Macduff and Duncan, in Holinshed's Chronicles, a history of England, Scotland and Ireland, familiar to Shakespeare and his contemporaries, although the events in the play differ extensively for the history of the real Macbeth. So literally he took the names and then changed fucking everything.
Yeah, he wasn't like the blood-shedding monster that he is. Like, he was just another king.
Yeah, for a short period of time. So basically why Shakespeare took these characters and told a totally different story is basically to reflect in subtext what his thoughts were about King James being crowned the King of England. I'll get into that, but basically the plot is Macbeth is about an ambitious Scottish general named Macbeth receives a prophecy from three witches that one day he will become the King of Scotland. He then becomes consumed by ambition and is kind of encouraged by his wife to murder the king at the time, who's called Duncan. And because he's such a powerful general, he is chosen by the Thanes of Scotland to become the next king. And then he quickly becomes plagued by guilt and paranoia and is forced to commit more and more murders to protect himself from any suspicion. And then he becomes a tyrannical ruler. Nice. And he basically just, him and his wife both go totally mental. There's ghosts, there's hallucinations, there's voices in one's head.
Oh, it's so fucking brilliant. Ridiculous. I love it. There's every, like, because you could have had either the voices in the head, the hallucinations, or the ghosts. You didn't need all of, like, these apparitions, but, like, he put all, like, it's so, it's so silly, and I love it. Oh, he was ahead of his time. You know what? I'm going to say it. Shakespeare's pretty good.
Actually, this is a good episode for Pride. Shakespeare's gay.
Oh, yeah. Big time. Or if you have ever watched Trinians or Ninians?
St. Trinians 2.
Yeah, St. Trinians 2, Fritton's Gold. Shakespeare was actually a girl.
Love. So a major source for the play comes from, can you guess?
Macbeth.
Demonology by King James I, which was published in 1597. So this is 9 years before the publication of Macbeth. So if we cast our minds back.
Our two Pride Month episodes, like the past two, are like connected.
Everything's connected.
It's all about James the VI.
It always is, and it's always about Mary Queen of Scots, as you'll see. Demonology is a pamphlet published by King James VI, which details the infamous North Berwick witch trials of 1590. The publication of Demonology was only a few years before Macbeth, with the themes and setting in a direct and comparative contrast with King James' personal obsessions with witchcraft, which he developed following his trip in stormy weather from Denmark to Scotland. And he believed that this storm was the work of witches. The women under trial in North Berwick confessed, under torture, to attempt to raise a tempest and sabotage the boat King James and his queen were on board. In Shakespeare's play, the three witches that, like, prophesied to Macbeth are discussing raising winds at sea in the opening lines of Act 1, Scene 3. So you can already see that he's kind of, like, used demonology as a source. And like, he basically writes this play to like get King James's attention.
It's a diss track. This whole play is a diss track. Like, it's a hit piece.
Kind of, isn't it? Like, he's using the fictional events he's played to reflect like real life tensions. A James Stuart succeeding Elizabeth I. So like, when James becomes King of England, many people doubt that this was the right choice, because James is a Scottish king and he's the son of Mary, Queen of Scots, who's a staunch Catholic and English traitor.
Queen.
I've got a quote from a historian, Robert Crawford. Quote, Macbeth was a play for post-Elizabethan England facing up to what it meant to have a Scottish king. England seems comparatively benign, whilst its northern neighbours is mired in a bloody monarch-killing past. Macbeth may have been set in medieval Scotland, but it is filled with material of interest to England and England's ruler. And then another critic at the time argues that the aspect of the play with the Fanes apparently choosing their king, so when Duncan is murdered and the Fanes select Macbeth, this was a reference to the Stuart claim to the English throne and the attempts that Parliament took to block the succession of Mary, Queen of Scots, from succeeding to the English throne. So they selected James rather than the actual heir to the throne, who was Mary, Queen of Scots. So through this, Shakespeare is implying that, like, through Macbeth, he's implying that James was indeed the rightful king of England, but owed his throne not to divine favour, which is what James would have had, because he was a massive believer in the divine right of kings, but it was actually down to the willingness of the English Parliament to accept the Protestant son of the Catholic Mary as their king, rather than Mary.
Yeah, isn't it kind of beautiful that no matter what era we're in, artists are using their art for political commentary that they can't otherwise express, lest they be like beheaded or something.
Yeah,
that's kind of sick.
Because, like, James, just like Elizabeth I was a patron to William Shakespeare and like gave him money to like basically fund the arts. And I wonder, because obviously James is not stupid, do you think he ever watched a play in Macbeth and went and like realized like the subtext?
Hey, because that's me.
he's not like, obviously, like, he's made Macbeth to be a murderer, but like that aside, he's saying that like Macbeth has been rightfully selected and so has James.
Yeah.
So like, it's not necessarily a diss.
Yeah.
But
it's very divisive. It's very, you could take it one, I like it because like with the context of the times it was like released in, you could take it either way. There's critique of both sides. It's a very balanced argument.
Yeah.
It does drag James a little. Like, it also, like, it makes him seem like a dum-dum. But, like, otherwise, politically, it's, like, very just.
I like when, like, artists or writers, like, criticize politicians. I love it, in fact.
We should do it more. You should do it.
Mm-hmm.
Say something bad about a politician right now. Becca's top says Tories kill.
And it's, again, this is an audio format, so it's not like I'm making a big statement. So that's a summary of the themes of Macbeth. But let's get into why we're actually talking about this. So in the backstages of theatres around the world, Macbeth is referred to by actors, directors and stagehands by the euphemisms the Scottish play or the Bard's play, as it is thought that speaking the name Macbeth inside a theatre, other than it is called for in the script while rehearsing or performing, will cause disaster.
The episode of The Simpsons where they go to the UK.
I'm literally going to be talking about that at the end, so shut up. That was going to be in your part.
Oh, sorry.
So, the traditional origin of this curse is said to be when the play first came out, a real coven of witches were angry at Shakespeare for, like, slandering witches and using a real spell in his play. One hypothesis is that they, like, literally put a spell on the play and cursed it forevermore.
Oh my God, I love that.
one more realistic hypothesis is that Macbeth, because it was a popular play, would be put on in theatres that were experiencing financial trouble so that they could make profit through putting on Macbeth. But obviously the theatres are run down, they're understaffed, tragedy unfolds. Yeah.
And then also these, like, if it doesn't hit or people don't come to see it, they're also poor theatres, so then like your whole business implodes. So that's kind of unlucky, I guess.
Yeah. The most notorious disaster related to the play is the Astor Palace riot. Astor Palace was a theatre in Manhattan which had two notorious actors who played Shakespearean roles, American actor Edwin Forrest and English actor William Charles Macready. So the genesis of the riot is thought to have been a disagreement between these two on who was the best at playing the major Shakespearean characters. During the argument, the word Macbeth is obviously called out because one of them's like, well, I was better than Macbeth. And they're arguing in a theatre. And therefore, a fight breaks out between the two actors. And then this spreads into the crowds and a riot ensues. Everybody attended the theatre at this time and it was entertainment for everybody. So you'd have rich people in the boxes and then in the stalls you'd have the poors. So as there were many different classes and groups, so there were immigrants, fae, everywhere because it's Manhattan. Mm. There's Irish people, Italian people, people, fae, Mexico, Holland. Spain, Holland, Germany, everywhere. So this riot inside the theatre essentially becomes a mini class and race war. Between 22 and 31 rioters died and more than 120 people were injured.
No way.
It was the deadliest to that date, was the deadliest number of civic disturbances in Manhattan, which, and it generally pitted immigrants and nativists against each other and together against the wealthy who controlled the city's police and state militia. It was the most numbers of death outside of the Civil War. I want to say that Astor Palace, because this might be a little bit topical at the moment, Astor Palace, I'm pretty sure, is named after like a really rich family from Manhattan. And I'm pretty sure John Jacob Astor was a passenger on the Titanic.
Oh my God. I think so.
Yeah, because Titanic's been in the news recently.
Yeah. Every time I go into work and people are like, did you hear about that? I'm like, who fucking didn't hear about it? What do you mean? What do you mean, did you hear about that? Please.
We're not going to get into it, but just thought that would be a fun wee
that
thing.
That is
to
very topical.
So there are more mishaps related to Macbeth. The Oldham Coliseum in Greater Manchester is said to be one of the most haunted theatres in England. And in 1947, actor Harold Norman, who was a non-superstitious actor, refused to follow theatrical tradition when it came to the Scottish play. And he died 3 weeks after being stabbed by a sword whilst performing the title character of Macbeth.
Stabbed during a scene with a sword?
Yeah, for the gut. I don't know why they were using like swords that were like sharp enough to maim.
He wanted him gone.
He's like, well, he's no superstitious enough. I'll show him.
I'll show
I'll
you.
I'll give him something to be superstitious about. And then on the 2nd of December 1964, a fire burned down the Di Maria National Theatre in Lisbon, Portugal.
Lisbon, happy pride.
Love is love.
Love is love.
Lisbon. Can you guess the play that was on, the title play in this theater?
Hairspray.
It was Guys and Dolls.
All my sons, all my sons. Final answer, all my sons.
So this is my favorite one. Ari Aster, writer and director of Hereditary, said that during filming, Alex Wolff told him not to say the name of William Shakespeare's Scottish play out loud because he's some superstitious theatre legend. And Ari Aster smugly announced the name, and then one of the lights burst during the shooting of the following scene.
I would have, like, thrown something at it.
Oh, no, wait, this is my favourite one. This is my favourite one. can't even say it. I gave you this one to read because I knew you'd love it. At the 94th Academy Awards, Chris Rock congratulated Denzel Washington on his performance in the tragedy of Macbeth, saying the name of the Scottish play aloud in the Dolby Theatre.
I know where this is going.
Moments later, Rock was slapped by Will Smith after...
Wait, that's crazy.
Will Smith, after making a joke about Smith's wife, Jada Pinkett Smith, viewers quickly went to social media to joke that Rock had suffered from the curse of the Scottish So stupid. Anyway, I mean, theatres and, like, actors who work in the theatre, like, they're quite superstitious anyway, can, like, break a leg kind of things. So there's cleansing rituals to do with the play. When the name Macbeth is spoken in a theatre, tradition requires that the person who spoke it to leave, perform traditional cleansing rituals, and then be invited back into the theatre. The rituals are supposed to ward off evil that utter in the play's name is feared to bring on. So if it is a curse that's come through witches, this ritual can kind of ward off the evil. The rituals include running out of the theatre, turning round 3 times in a circle, spitting over one's left shoulder, swearing, or reciting a line from another one of Shakespeare's play. Popular lines for this purpose include "Angels and ministers of grace defend us" from Hamlet. And then a mere elaborate cleansing ritual involves leaving the theatre.
There's a more elaborate one? That was pretty elaborate.
Well, this one's also kind of similar in that it involves leaving the theatre, spinning around, brushing oneself off. So from head to toe, brushing yourself off and saying Macbeth 3 times. And then running back to the theatre door, banging on it and being invited back into the theatre. Some production groups insist that the offender may not re-enter the theatre until invited to do so, like a vampire, and therefore making it easy to punish frequent offenders by leaving them outside. The cleansing rituals have been parodied numerous times in popular culture, including in The Simpsons. Would you like to explain?
There's the episode of The Simpsons where they go to London. Is it Ian McKellen is playing Macbeth in Macbeth, and then they all keep saying Macbeth, and like the sign falls on him, and there are so many things that happen, but then Marge goes, "Stop saying Macbeth," and then he gets hit again, and then she goes.
I think like lightning strikes him right, and like
like twice,
yeah. So the mark falls through the sign above the stage and then it just leaves Beth up there.
Yeah.
That is basically the curse of the Scottish play. But upon my research for this, basically the intro for this, I got the Wikipedia and then like loads of different stuff was gathered for like different articles about the Scottish play. But at the bottom of the Wikipedia article for the Scottish play or the Curse of Macbeth was a link that is called the Curse of Scotland, and I had never heard about this before. So this is another Scottish curse. The Curse of Scotland is a nickname used for the 90 diamonds, the playing card. The expression has been used at least since the early 18th century, and many explanations have been given to the origins of the nickname for the card. Have you ever heard this?
Literally never once in my life.
So,
but I will be taking that to every card game I go to from now on.
One explanation for this name is that it comes via a proverb. Quote, "For Scotland's kings for many ages were observed, each ninth to be a tyrant, who by civil war and all fatal consequences of intestine discord, plunging the divided kingdom into strange disorders." So it's basically like for every ninth king, like the ninth one is a tyrant. I couldn't be arsed going to check, but I love the proverb. Other theories are that King James IV lost the 90 diamonds from his pack of cards before the Battle of Flodden. So basically, before the Battle of Flodden, he's in a tizzy because he's lost the 9 for his pack of cards, and he's basically going to be late to the Battle of Flodden, which he famously loses.
Yeah, bad.
Another one is that the butcher of Cumberland wrote his orders for no Jacobites to be taken alive after Flodden on the 9 of Diamonds. And there's another theory for that the Butcher of Cumberland actually wrote the names of the Jacobites he wanted left alive so that he can interrogate them on a 9 of Diamonds. Another one is that the villain of the massacre of Glencoe, Lord John Dalrymple, had 9 red diamonds on his coat of arms.
Did we do that one already?
Glencoe?
The Glencoe Massacre?
No, but we should.
We've alluded to it in like literally every episode.
Yeah, I know. We should probably do it soon. I mean,
this happened.
After we do this big series, I probably will look at Dane Culloden and therefore the battle, like the massacre at Glencoe.
It's the right thing to do.
It is the right thing to do.
It's not the fun thing to do, but it's the right thing to do.
Yeah. No laughter in those episodes. Anyway, so this is the last and my favourite explanation for why the 9 of Diamonds is called the Curse of Scotland. So Mary de Guise introduced the famous French card game Comet or Comet to Scotland, in which the winning card is the 9 of Diamonds, resulting in many of the Scottish nobility betting against the 9 of Diamonds and losing money. Therefore, the 9 of Diamonds was called the Curse of Scotland. Woohoo!
I love that. That one's the best one.
I got chills.
Oh, and it all comes back to Mary. How nice.
I know. So that's 2 different Scottish curses. We'll see if the Scottish play curse works on podcasts when this one flops.
We didn't need a curse for it.
Shut up. Well, when I go back and listen to my audio and it's like unusable,
it's ooh. That was really fun. I'm glad that you covered it all because you told it really well.
Oh, thanks, Liam.
You know how I always tell the story about I was on the train when I was like 3 years old and I saw witches? Yes, I always tell that story. Yeah, I pulled the emergency stop when I was 3 because I said I saw witches outside. Yeah, so between Forest and Brodie, which is like of Brodie Country Fair fame, if you've ever been, you know the food is fucking real. Oh my god, it's so good. It's such a granny place because everything costs so much and it's all like Highland cow sort of. I digress. Anyway, it's supposed that like in Forest is the place where the 3 witches foretold Macbeth's fate and how he would die. And it's on a mound known as Macbeth's Hillock, which hillock just means like small hill. Mm-hmm. Which I just love that it's connected to like right near where I'm from. Like my granda is like from there.
Mm-hmm.
That's real.
And it's also like
Macbeth is...
You had a vision?
Yeah. At 3 years old, I wasn't even sentient yet, so it was real. So, Shakespeare was a prophet.
He was a Nostradamus.
Yes. But gay.
The gay Nostradamus.
So Nostradamus.
No, I like that story. Feel free to repeat it whenever you want.
I will. I tell everyone all the time. I'm like, by the way, just so you know, witches are real.
I think you told that in the Tam O'Shanter episode.
I told it in Tam O'Shanter episode. I told it in the Superstitions episode. I told it in probably Mary Queen of Scots. I told it in the Witches episode.
Anyway, this has been the Creepy Wee Podcast. If you want to follow us on social media, you can find us on Instagram at the Creepy Wee Podcast, Twitter at the Creepy Wee Pod. Our website is thecreepyweepodcast.co.uk. Review us, give us 5 stars. Thanks. Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.